But for, there's a lot of new people here that maybe don't even know who John Maxwell is yet. So I asked John permission to read his bio. He says, well, you know, I don't need that. No, but people out there, do they need to know who is here and why he's here? You know, to have a man of John Maxwell's stature fall in love with all of you and be willing to put us on his schedule every year is really an amazing, amazing benefit. So we're a very blessed organization. So I want to read his bio here, so those of you that don't know who Dr. John Maxwell is, get some idea of how fortunate we all are. Dr. John Maxwell is an internationally recognized leadership expert, speaker, and author. He has sold over 20 million books. His organizations have trained more than 5 million leaders worldwide. Dr. Maxwell is the founder of Equip and Enjoy Stewardship Services. Every year he speaks to Fortune 500 companies, international government leaders, and audiences as diverse as the United States Military Academy at West Point, the National Football League, and ambassadors at the United Nations. A New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and Business Week best-selling author, Maxwell was named the world's top leadership guru. He doesn't like to be called a guru, but that was by leadershipsgurus.net. He was also one of only 25 authors and artists named to Amazon.com's 10th Anniversary Hall of Fame. Three of his books, The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, Developing a Leader Within You, and The 21 Indispensable Qualities of a Leader, have each sold over 1 million copies. And whenever he puts out a new book, it is printed in 17 different languages. So he's known all over the world. And don't worry, you don't need to record this, because he gives us the privilege of recording it. And then we put it out on standing order over this next year, so you'll all be able to get that on your standing order. So I know George Lee wants to say a few words.
Thank you so much. I am just so excited for each and every one of you. And you know, Mr. John Maxwell is world-renowned, but he's your friend. And when he says, hi, my name's John and I'm your friend, John Maxwell means what he says. It comes from his heart. He loves to be here with each and every one of you. He loves to teach. He loves to give. And we are just fortunate. We are incredibly fortunate and blessed that he is part of the worldwide family. He's part of us, and he'll tell you that himself. And so just enjoy him, enjoy his teaching, enjoy his humor. He loves to make people laugh and have a good time. And just learn from what he has to share with each and every one of us. We're very fortunate, we're very blessed.
Okay, let's give it up for Dr. John C. Maxwell.
Thinking about you, I'll be praying for you, and I'll just be believing that this will be the best, most successful worldwide spring leadership that you've ever had.
Yeah. It's good to be here, and my name's John. I'm your friend. And talk to me. On three, tell me, what's your name? One, two, three. What's your name? That's what I thought it was. I just wanted to make sure. That's exactly what I thought it was. I am delighted to be here. You know, Martin and I are grandparents. We have 5 grandchildren, and you know, I've talked about the grandchildren, but I'm going to talk about them some more. And that's just that. You know, you say, well, I don't want to hear about them. I could care less. I just, you know, we have 5 of them, 5 babies. They're They're 10, 10, 7, 6, and 4. And in fact, I just, Margaret and I were in Africa. I was doing a speaking tour through South Africa and then Ukraine and Romania and Russia. But when we were in South Africa, we flew our kids and our grandbabies over for 5 days, and we went on an animal reserve, and we looked at animals, and it was, oh my goodness. I mean, listen, most of you are way too young to have grandchildren, but just look at, if you have children, let them live. As you may not know this, if you kill your children, you don't get grandchildren.
Yeah.
And for Margaret, that was the only thing that held us back. You know, because there'd be times when you say, especially if your kids are teenagers, you've got to, should have let them live, you flip a coin, and, all right, another day, but just let them live, and then there's a day they'll give you grandchildren, and when when you hold that grandbaby, oh my goodness, when no one has to tell you that first grandchild, you have that baby, you say, this is the smartest, most beautiful grandbaby ever.
Yeah.
And you know it. No one has to tell you that. And then you ask yourself, why did intelligence skip a generation? So I brought a laminated card. I brought what being a grandparent meant. My young grandson called the other day to wish me happy birthday. He asked me how old I was. I told him I was 64. He was quiet for a moment, and then he asked, did you start at one? A grandmother was telling her little granddaughter what her own childhood was like. And she said, we used to skate outside on a pond, and I had a swing made from a tree. We hung it on the tree out in the front yard. We rode our pony. We picked wild raspberries out of the woods. The little girl was just wide-eyed, taking it all in. At last, she said, boy, Grandma, I sure wish I'd have gotten to know you sooner. My grandson was visiting one day, and he asked, Grandma, do you know that you and God are a lot alike? And Grandma, she just kind of mentally polished her halo, and she said, oh, sweetheart, that was so nice. How do you think we're alike? And you're both old, he replied. When my grandson asked me how old I was, I teasingly replied, I'm not sure. Look on your underwear, Grandpa, he advised. Mine says I'm 4 to 6. Oh, this is good. Let me read you a couple more. You're so good. A second grader came home from school and said to his grandma, guess what? We learned how to make babies today. Grandmother's a little more than surprised, and she just kind of tried to keep her cool. And she said, well, that's interesting, honey. How do you make babies? Oh, it's simple, replied the girl. You just change the Y to an I and add a S. A 6-year-old with them was asked where his grandma lived. Oh, he said, she lives at the airport. And when we want her, we just go at the airport and get her. And when we're done with her visit, we just take her back to the airport. Take her to the airport. One more. About grandparents. It's funny, when they bend over, you hear gas leaks, and they blame their dog. That's so great to be a grandparent. I was asked recently in a Q&A, they said, John, talk to us. What what's the latest trend as far as leadership, and what's the latest trend as far as being successful in building a business? Well, I said it's very interesting. In the 1980s, management was the word. If you wanted to be successful in business, you bought a management book. In the 1990s, if you wanted to be successful, you bought a leadership book. If you go into a bookstore, the management books came off the shelves in the 1990s, the leadership books, and I was very blessed. I was very privileged. 1993, 94, I wrote Developing the Leader Within You, Developing the Leaders Around You, and I kind of was one of the front runners on the leadership movement that has become so large around the world in writing books. And so leadership was the thing in the 1990s. And then when we came into the new century, 2000, and people say, okay, what's the thing now? I mean, if I'm going to be good at this, if I'm going to build a business, what do I need to do? I can promise you, it's shifted again. It has shifted big time in the last 4 years. It's now team leadership. The most important thing, leaders are constantly asking this question all the time. How do I develop a good team? And I'm going to tell you why. Things are so complex, things are going so fast anymore, that if you don't have a team, if you don't develop a team, you're just not going to be able to know what you need to know and do what you need to do. And because team leadership is so important, I thought this year I'm going to spend the two nights and we're going to put together kits for you. We're going to help you to develop a team of leaders. Let me ask you a very simple question. How many of you have a big, not a small one, a big dream for your life? Can I see your hand? Not a little one, a big one. Look at your neighbor and say, I've got a big dream. Go ahead and tell me.
You got a big dream.
Let me ask you another question. For that big dream that you have, how many of you think you're going to get there? Let me see your hand. Well, you are a positive bunch, aren't you? You are a positive bunch. Boy, it's just, woo. Feel the energy? My name's John, and I'm your friend. And I'm going to help you right now, because I'm going to tell you, I'm going to give you with about a 70 to 80% shot at this. I'm going to let you know within about a 70 to 80% shot if you're going to reach your dream tonight, right now. You say, well, how can you do that, John? You don't even know what my dream is, and you don't know what I'm thinking. No, I don't know what you're thinking. I don't know what your dream is, but I can tell you within 70 to 80%, every one of you in this room, I can tell you that close to accurate if your dream's going to become a reality. Say, how do you know this? It's very simple. Your team, the team that you develop, the team that you recruit, the team that you equip, the team that you spend time with, the team that you mentor, whatever that team is going to determine the size of your dream. Here's the statement. The size of your team determines the size of your dream. And I'm not talking about quantity as far as team members. I'm talking about quality. So if you have a big dream, let's say from a 1 to a 10, you got a 9 dream. I mean, this is almost like a 10 dream. Maybe you do have a 10 dream. I don't know. But let's just say you have a 9 dream. You say, John, do you think I have a shot at achieving it? It's very simple. If you have a 9 team, you'll achieve your 9 dream. But here's what happens all the time. I have people that will come up and they've got a big dream. They have a number 10 dream. And guess what they have? They have a number 3 team. And if you have a number 3 team, you won't achieve a number 10 dream. Can I tell you something? If you have a number 3 team, you'll achieve a number 3 dream. In fact, I'm going to define nightmare for you right now. A nightmare is a big dream and a bad team. That's a nightmare. And I see people all the time who have these wonderful goals, they have these wonderful aspirations, and they have no shot of getting there. And they have no shot of getting there for one very simple reason. They have no shot of getting there because they don't understand the only way to get the big dream is to develop the team. And the laws of teamwork will change your team's life. When I wrote the laws of teamwork, I mean, they're not the principles. They're not the ideas of teamwork. They're not the good thoughts about teamwork. These are the laws of teamwork. When I wrote the laws of leadership, I asked myself, how do I know it's a law? Well, it's a law if it works in every culture. In other words, it not only works here in America, it not only works in Canada, but it'll work around the world. And let me just say this. I have an equip organization that has trained 5 million leaders in 156 countries now. So we're not in all the world, but we're in three-fourths of the world, and in 4 years we'll be in all the countries of the world. And I can tell you, we teach the laws of teamwork around the world, and it works in every culture. I mean, see, if it's a law, it works anywhere. It works in every culture. It works whether it's no matter the gender. It works no matter the age. It works no matter the time. These laws are timeless. These laws worked 100 years ago. They'll work 100 years from now. They're not faddish. They won't go out. They're the laws of teamwork. They work. And they work all the time. And they work everywhere. I remember one time I was signing some books during a break, and I had a guy come up to me, and I'm signing his book, and he said, John, he said, I read the laws book. I said, he said, I just want you to know I don't agree with one of the laws. I said, that's okay. And it bothered him that it was okay that he didn't agree with one of the laws. So he said, I really want you to know I don't agree with one of your laws. I said, that's fine. That's all right. Now he's really bothered. He's bothered that I'm not bothered. So he comes back one morning and says, look, he said, really, he said, and he pointed to me, he said, that law, I disagree with that law. I said, it's okay. Well, he says, well, you wrote it, didn't you? I wrote it. Well, why doesn't it bother you that I don't agree with all laws? I said, I didn't write the book to make you happy. I wrote the book to help you. I'm a leader, not a comedian. I want to help you. I don't care if you agree with the laws. I mean, it's like somebody comes and say, well, I don't agree with the law of gravity. Do you think I care? Now, I'll tell you what, go to a four-story building and jump off. You'll buy into the law immediately. You see, the laws don't ask you, do you like them? The laws don't ask you if you're happy with them. The laws are the laws. And what I'm going to teach you tonight and tomorrow, they're the laws of teamwork. And I'm going to tell you right now, they work. Yeah. They work. The Green Bay Packers will tell you they work. Because the Green Bay Packers religiously use the laws of teamwork. In fact, they called the other day, again, after the Super Bowl. They called before the Super Bowl, wanted me in. They called after the Super Bowl, wanted me in. I'm taking total credit for the Super Bowl win. The only reason the Pittsburgh Steelers did, they did not ask me. What am I supposed to do? I mean, you can't help them if they don't ask. I mean, what are you going to do? Just let them lose. You just say, all right, I'm sorry, you lost. So I'm going to teach them to you now, so I want you to look at your neighbor, and I want you to say, these laws will work for you. You go ahead and tell them.
These laws
will work for you. Hey, now, you just told them that these laws will work for them. Do me a favor. Listen carefully. You just said, these laws will work for you. Now look at them and say, if you work these laws. You got to work the laws. You got to work the laws. Law number one. Are you ready to go? Let's go. Let's rock and roll. Number one. Law number one is the law of significance. And the law of significance says one is too small of a number to achieve greatness. Period. One is too small of a number to achieve greatness. In other words, you and I cannot achieve greatness by ourselves. And that's why I asked a little bit ago, what's your dream? Well, you're all raised here. You got a big dream. Well, here's the question. Do you have a big team? Because the size of your team is going to determine the size of your dream. And teamwork makes the dream work. Always has, always will. So, you got to look at yourself and say, if I want to accomplish something, if I want to do something significant, the question I've got to ask myself is, are we doing something together that's going to make a difference? Are we doing something together that's going to be significant? John Wooden, the great basketball coach for UCLA, who just passed away last year at the age of 99, he was 4 months away from this great man, who was a mentor of mine for several years. He was just 4 months away from his 100th birthday. And just a great man. And a great teacher and a phenomenal leader. In fact, just a little side insight. It's a little excited. When I went to the family asked me to come out for the memorial service, and I did. And when I went to the memorial service, they shared with me that the I wrote a foreword about 3 years ago for one of John Wooden's books. He asked me to, and I did. It was an honor. In fact, I had more of an honor writing the foreword to his book than I had writing my own books. And so about a year later, we were together, and he said, John, what can I do for you? And I said, you already do it. You're my mentor. You help me. And he said, no, I want to do something for you. And so we talked for a little while, and I didn't want to ask. I mean, he's already done a lot. He didn't. He's the man. He's the guru. And he said, no, I want to do something for you. So I said, well, Coach, I'm writing a book, and would you do the foreword for me? He said, oh, I'll do the foreword. The book, it's not coming out for 2 weeks. I write 3 books at a time. Okay? In fact, I'm writing a book this week. I just started chapter 9 this morning of the book. Okay. But the book it's coming out like 2 years from now. Okay. It's called Sometimes You Win, Sometimes You Learn. It's good. Yeah. It's just good. I mean, if it's good, it's good. You know what I'm saying? It's good. And sometimes you win, sometimes you learn. And he said, I'll do the foreword for that book, because I mean, it's a book on winning. And he said, I'll do the foreword for that. The last thing he did before he died was write that foreword. And I'm so excited about it. And John Wooden told me one day, we were together, and he said, John, every day as a leader, I ask myself one question. Now, when John Wooden says every day as a leader, he asks himself one question, I lean forward and I do what you do. I got my notebook open and I got my pen there because I know he's going to lay one on me. I said, Coach, what's the question you ask every day? And here's what he said. Every day as a coach, I ask myself one question. How can I make my team better? Every day. How can I make my team better? Well, I mean, is there a new play that I can install to make the team better? Is there something I can talk to about it on the practice floor today that'll make the team better? Is there a drill that I can teach them that'll help them to get a little speed and maybe a little more height? Is there a ball drill? How can I make the team better? Now let me just say something to you. That's the most important question as a leader you'll ever ask. How can I make the team better? You say, John, why is that the most important question I'll ever ask as a leader? I'm gonna tell you exactly why. As you make the team better, guess what happens to you? You get better. And in other words, you're going to improve with the team. So as the team is lifted, the tide lifts, and you just go right with it. And so as I'm teaching these 17 laws of teamwork these two nights, constantly asking yourself, how can I make the team better? What can I do to make the team better? I had a person last week in Vegas when I was down there, and they came up there and they said, John, the question's just gripping me. How can I make the team better? And I looked at them and I said, how badly do you want to build a team? Oh, they said, after you teach, it's obvious I got to have it. If I don't build my team, I'm not going to get my dream. I said, how bad do you want? Oh, I really want. I said, how bad do you want? I said, are you willing? Would you be willing to spend $1 a day for 4 months to build a great team? Yeah. I said, okay. Just go back and get the kit. Go back and get the kit because it's got the laws, it's got the qualities, it's got the exercises, it's got the form. It's what NFL coaches use. It's what they use at West Point for teamwork. It's the stuff. For a dollar a day. For 4 months. I'm amazed at people who want to be successful and they're unwilling to give the time, the effort, the energy, the money, the commitment to make a difference. This is a little bit beyond me. Because here's what I know. Some of you are very close to success. And your ability to go any farther is not going to be based upon what you can do alone, but it's going to be based upon what you can do by developing your team. And the law of significance says one is too small of a number to achieve greatness. It is impossible for you, it is impossible for me to do something great by ourselves. Now let me tell you something. I'm going to tell you why I'm passionate about this. When I started off when I was young, and I look out here at this crowd, and there's so what's exciting about this night's event? Some of you are you're just so young, but I also understand at my age, everybody's starting to look. So don't get too excited. When I was your age, I did not know how to do this. Now, I started off as a pastor, but I didn't know how to develop a team, and I didn't know how to train anybody, and I didn't know how to equip anybody. But I worked hard, and I had a heart. I love people, and I want to tell you, I went to my first little church, and we grew from 300 to 300. I mean, it was a country church, rural country, 300 to 300. We grew, and I was so excited because I just worked hard, and Margaret worked hard, and I just worked, and we got it up to 300, and then I left that church, and I went to another state for my second parish, and the church that I left in 6 months went from 300. Down to below 100. And I said, what happened? Where'd they go? It's gonna fall away. And for 6 months, it bothered me. I kept thinking, where did the people go? What happened? I mean, we had that up to 300 people, and all of a sudden it's like 85 in the church, and what happened? It took me about 6 months because I didn't have any training. I wasn't being taught what you're being taught tonight. And about 6 months into it, I realized I didn't train anybody. I didn't equip anybody. I didn't develop a team. I knew nothing. I did it all myself. And so because I did it all myself, when I was there, it did well. And the moment that I left, it went right back down. And I determined then, at that time I was 25. And I determined then it was never going to happen to me again. I said, I'm never going to have that happen again. I'm going to train people. I'm going to develop people. I'm going to build teams. I'm going to spend time doing it because I understood at that point the mistake that I made, and that's why I'm so passionate about you. I want you to get started right. And the way to get started is you gotta understand how to build teams, and you gotta understand how to equip those team members. You gotta be able to do if you could just do those two things. I promise you, success will be yours. No doubt about it. I know that to be a fact. I love this story. It's on a laminated card. And I just love the story. It's just, and I love the story because it talks about a guy without a team, a guy that did something all by himself. It's the story of a bricklayer who tried to move 500 pounds of bricks from the top of a four-story building to the sidewalk below. The problem was he tried to do it all by himself. And what I've got here are his own words taken from his insurance claim form. Here's what he said. He said, it was taking me too long to carry the bricks down by hand, so I decided to put them in a barrel and lower them by a pulley, which I fastened at the top of the building. So after tying the rope securely at ground level, I went up to the top of the building and I fastened the rope around the barrel, loaded it with bricks, and then I swung it over the sidewalk for the descent. Then he said, I went down to the sidewalk, and I untied the rope. Holding it securely, he tied the barrel down slowly. But since I weigh only 140 pounds, 500-pound load jerked me from the ground so fast that I didn't have time to think of letting go of the rope. As I passed between the second and third floor, I met the barrel coming down. This accounts for the bruises and the lacerations on my upper body. I held tightly to the rope until I reached the top where my hand became jammed in the pulley. This accounts for my broken thumb. At the same time, however, the barrel hit the sidewalk with a bang and the bottom fell out. With the weight of the bricks gone, the barrel weighed only 40 pounds. Thus, my 140-pound body began a swift descent, and I met the barrel coming up. This accounts for my broken ankle. Slowed over slightly, I continued the descent, and I landed on the pile of bricks. Down for my sprained back, my broken collarbone. Now, this is my favorite sentence of the whole story. At this point, he said, I lost my presence of mind completely. I'd like to debate that. At this point, he said, I lost my presence of mind completely. crushing down on me, and this accounts for my head injury. And as for the last question on your insurance claim form, what would I do if the same situation arose again? Please be assured I'm finished doing the job all by myself. You gotta have teeth. It's a great story, but you gotta have teeth. You gotta have teeth. And when I say you gotta have a team, I mean you gotta have more than just people, a group of people. A group of people is not a team. It's just a group of people. You gotta take a group of people. And you gotta understand what qualities they need to be good team players. You gotta understand what laws you need to incorporate to develop that team. The law of significance, one is too small of a number to achieve greatness. It is a phenomenal law. Law number two is the law of the big picture. And the law of the big picture just simply says the goal is more important than the role. This is a great law. What this is all about is understanding that no matter what our role is on the team, that the big picture is not us, and the big picture is not what we do, but the big picture is the team and what we do together. There's the key. It's not what I do, it's what we do together. And the law of the big picture says never get confused that you're more important than the team, or never get confused that the team is there for you, but it's a big picture that we're all in this together. Now, humanly, we all have our own ego. Humanly, we all have our own, you know, we want to do well, of course, and we recognize, but the law of the big picture says it's not about you. It's not about me. It's about the team. I have a friend who he just has got some real issues. And he just talks about himself way too much. The other day we were having lunch, he said, and he just, I mean, for 20 minutes, just talked about himself. I mean, I'm glazed over, you know, saying this too shall pass. You know? And he gets done talking about himself. He says, you know, I'm so sorry. He said, enough, I've talked enough about me. He said, you talk about me. Now, in case you're feeling a little superior, say, well, I'm not that kind of an ego person. In case you feel a little superior, let me just say, we really do think we're special. And that's good, because I think we are special. But let me just give you a test. Let me just ask you a question and be honest, okay? Will you be honest with me?
Yeah.
Okay, be honest with me. When you're with a group, and they take a picture of you in the group, when you see the picture, who is the first person you look for? Now, I'm going to just take a wild guess. I'm probably off. How many of you would say probably the first person I look for in that group picture is me?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Now, if the person sitting beside you didn't raise their hand, they have other issues. And I don't have time to get into them, but they need a therapist. You understand that. They need a therapist, and they got other issues. Because we all do. I'm having a good time. And can I tell you something? When it's a group picture, and it's a group picture, guess who? And I'm in it. Guess who I look for? I look for me. Isn't that just human nature, huh? That's okay. We're not picking on you for that. It's okay. But let me ask you another question. When you see the group picture, how do you determine if it's a good? I see the train coming. How do you determine that it's a good group picture? I know how you determine it's a good group picture. You look at yourself, and if you look good, you say, oh, that's a good group picture. I love that picture. Oh, yes, yes. Oh, yeah, we need that, right? Get that right on. Get a frame, you know, get that. And if you look at a picture and your eyes are closed, what do you say? Oh, that's an awful picture. Dear God, where's the camera? Get the cameraman. Get back in here. Come on, let's take another shot here. Let's do it one more time. You know what? Yeah. And what we basically judge the picture based on us and our whole bunch of people because they don't see the big picture. They judge everything about the team about where they are on the team and how they look on the team and where they stood on the team and Everything is judged through one person's eyes instead of every person's eyes. Now, I think, well, let me tell you a discussion. A few years ago, I did the NBA All-Star Game, and the referees of the NBA used this book right here, the 17 Essential Qualities of a Team Player is the primary textbook for the NBA refs. And so I was going to do the All-Star Game for, they asked me, or the NBA had asked me to do the All-Star Game. And so I flew to the city, and the ref said, would you have lunch with us? I said, I could not have lunch with you. And so I had lunch with them, had a great time together. They talked to me about the training and how they use this book all the time to train the refs on the qualities of team players. So because I had these refs who literally see the greatest basketball players in the world, I thought I'll ask them a question. And I looked at them and I said, who's the greatest basketball player that's ever lived? And they got into a great discussion. I love it because they got into a discussion. They talked about, you know, probably the 8-10 greatest basketball player. But what was very interesting is they came down to the conclusion, it was unanimous, that Michael Jordan was the greatest basketball player that had ever played again. Now, that was from the eyes of not coaches or players. I'm sorry, the NBA, the greatest player. Okay. And I think they're right. I think they're right. Let's go back to the good old day, Michael Jordan days, when he played with the Chicago Bulls, and Phil Jackson, and of course they had, you know, Scottie Pippen on there, and they had Dennis Rodman. They had these, what, 5-6 NBA championships. Okay. Let's go back to those days. We're in the United States Center in Chicago, and there's 5 seconds left to go in the game, and the Chicago Bulls are behind 1 point. But the good news is they got the ball. So Phil Jackson calls timeout, and the team huddles around Phil Jackson, and of course, he's got his pen, and he's got his clipboard out there, and 20,000 fans in the United States, they're all standing, because they're going nuts, because they realize this next play is going to determine who wins the game, and here's Phil Jackson, he's got his players around him, and he's got his he is excellent and Owen, and he's just diagramming, and he's just going real crazy, and while he's excellent and Owen designing the play, the last play of the game, 20,000 fans, they're in the stands, they're not in the huddle, but all 20,000, I mean all 20,000 know what Phil Jackson is saying to the team. He's saying, we have the best player in the world, Mr. Michael. And he is excellent and Owen, so Michael has the ball in the hand because Michael is going to shoot. Phil Jackson knows it, Michael knows it, Chicago Bulls knows it, the opposing team knows it. Everybody's watching TV. I mean, you can X and O all you want to, Michael is going to take the show. This is an IQ test. Let's say they're about to break the huddle. They're just about to break the huddle. I mean, they're just in there ready. Okay, come on. This is it, guys. Come on. Let's set the picks. Let's get the ball in. Let's give Michael a good look at that pass. They're just ready to break the huddle. And one of the players on the team, let's say, just raises his hand. Oh. Coach Jackson. Excuse me, Coach. Before we go out. Come. Can I say something? Yeah. What do you want? Okay. I don't know how to say this. And I maybe not the appropriate time, but Michael's going to shoot. Yeah, Michael's going to shoot. Ball. What do you want? It's my turn. It's my turn to shoot the ball. In fact, Michael has shot 17 times.
Junior here.
Because it's
his turn.
Well, Jackson's going this good, he's going to say, shut up! Sit down. No. Don't sit down. Go to the shower. Go to the in fact, go through the shower. Keep on walking. Because Phil Jackson understands that what is his responsibility as the leader of the team? His responsibility is to put the ball in the hands of the guy that's going to bring the win, and his responsibility is to get the win for the sake of the team, and he understands the big picture. The kid doesn't understand the big picture, and I'm just going to tell you something. If you're going to be a great team player, you got to give up. In fact, you got to give up to go up. And you got to understand that in the big picture, it's not about you, it's not about me, it's about the team. Coach Wood, one day we were talking, and he, oh boy, what an incredible lesson he gave me one day. He told me, he said, years ago, when he was coaching, on the first day of practice, a kid walked on the floor. His name was Sidney Wicks, and he said, John, literally the kid, even though he was a young player, was the best player on the team. Hey, in fact, he said, by the end of the practice the first day, everybody knew Sidney Wicks was the best player on the UCLA Bruins basketball team. But he had a problem. He didn't understand the law of the picture. He was selfish. He thought it was all about him. He thought that the group picture was a surrounding cast with him in the middle. And he thought the other ball players, they were there for one reason, to give him the ball. And he was selfish. And he wasn't a good team player. And he didn't have a good team attitude. And I said, Coach, what did you do if he's the best player on the team? He said, well, I didn't play him. He said, the only weapon that a coach has against that kind of foolishness is you got to bench him. And so I just sat him on the bench. I said, Sidney, you don't play with a team spirit. You don't have a team attitude. You're selfish. You're not a good team player. And so I'm going to sit you on the bench. He said, I did. And he said, he would just come after me. He said, Coach, let me in the game. I'm the best player on the team. You're not the best player on the team. And he said, John will look at me one day. He said, Sidney, let me tell you something. You are exactly right. You are the best player on the team, but the team doesn't play best when you're on it. In other words, Sidney, you don't see the big picture. It's not about you. And the law of the big picture is huge. Because the greatest teams are not necessarily even the teams that have the greatest players, but the greatest teams are the teams that have players who understand commitment and partnership and sacrifice and give up. An interesting story. In 1995, 16 years ago, when I was getting into another phase of my life, and I was leaving the pastoral life, and I was going to do international stuff and business stuff, and I was going to do a lot of what I do today, I realized that I wanted to still be part of a team, and I realized I was kind of leaving a team. That whole process, and so I picked out 10 people that I decided that I would serve. These are 10 people that I would serve them. I would do anything I could to help them. I would add value to them. I would come alongside of them, and I would take a pure servant's role with them. I looked at people. I thought they were smarter than I was, bigger than I was, more successful than I was, and I said, I'll just serve them. Now, what's interesting is one of the persons I picked out in 1995 was Tom Mullins. At that time, Tom had a very small church he planted in the Palm Beach, West Palm Beach, Florida area, where I live. And he just was planting just a few hundred people at the beginning. And I said, I'm going to go serve him. So a few years ago, Margaret and I moved from Atlanta, where we had our companies, and I went to West Palm, and I said, Tom, I said, I'll come on your teaching team. I can't teach a lot because I travel a lot, but you know, half a dozen, seven, maybe eight, maybe max eight weekends a year, I'll teach for you. I'll teach for you, and you can let the business community know, and we'll just draw a whole bunch of people in the church, and that was about 6 years ago now, and it's been amazing. And now we're averaging almost 20,000 people a Sunday. And it's phenomenal. Now, I serve him. You say, what do you mean you serve him, John? I serve him. In fact, today he texted me and said, John, on Easter, would you go up to Stewart and kind of take that campus, because we have four campuses now, and I just texted him back, hey, Tom, I love you, you're the boss, I'll be in Stewart. I'm part of the team. I'm not the main player. I'm a senior pastor. I'm not going to sit on the board of elders. I've done all that stuff. I don't want to do that. I just serve him. I just serve him. And so I always do, and I do, what I do is I do what we call the garbage Sundays.
The garbage Sundays are the Sundays that are naturally low. The Sunday after Christmas, the Sunday after New Year's, the Sunday after Thanksgiving, Labor Day Sunday, Memorial Day Sunday. I mean, when people are kind of gone, I do the garbage Sunday. I said, Tom, let me take the low, the natural low Sundays, and we'll advertise and we'll be there. In fact, last Labor Day, we had a record attendance crowd. It was on the low garbage Sunday. We had a record crowd. I said, we'll just promote the heck out of those low days, and I'll do the teaching for you. And in fact, Mark and I were having lunch one day. He said, John, she said, when you were a senior pastor, you used to give your staff those garbage Sundays. And she said, now you've got it. She said, your career is really taking off. She sure has, baby. I'll never forget. I was going down the freeway right about Christmas time, and Tom called me. I was going to preach the Sunday after Christmas, the 26th, then the next weekend after New Year's, and then the next one. So I was going to do three straight Sundays. And I had developed a series of sermons that I'd worked very hard on. It was a really good. I was very excited about teaching this series. They called me on the phone. He said, John, I know you've probably got all your lessons prepared, but he said, I was talking with the staff this week, and we really need a series on spiritual growth and personal growth. He said, Would you mind doing those three sentences on personal growth? I said, Tom, is that what you want?
Yeah.
I said, you got it, baby. I'll do it. Man, he hung up, and I'm in my car, and I'm saying, I have spent days developing this other material. I'm going to have to switch it all now. I'm going to have to go home, and I'm going to have to get my stuff out, and I'm going to have to start it all over. But it's okay. This is the big picture. He's on the team. So I went back, and I redid my series, and I did the three Sundays. And I just want you to know, it was amazing. It was the best three Sundays of my life. It was the best. I taught personal growth and how to grow in your faith, and I did these three, and it was magic. It was magic. We out of that series enrolled 9,000 people in personal classes to develop themselves over the next 6 weeks. Enrolled 9,000. And here's what I'm saying. It would have never happened if I'd had my way. You see, if I'd had my way, I'd have done a series I already had prepared for, because I worked days on that series, and it was a great series. But I don't have my way. You see, I don't have my way, and you shouldn't have your way. Teamwork makes the dream work. And you know, can I tell you what a sign of maturity is? A sign of maturity is when a person is willing to give up a little bit of what they got so that it helps the team advance the ball. And that's a beautiful thing. And it's a beautiful thing. And let me just say something else. I purposely put myself in team situations where I'm not the leader. I would never follow a leader who didn't follow a leader. I wouldn't do that. And I would never follow a leader that isn't accountable to someone. And let me just say one other thing. If you're at the head of the class, you're in the wrong class. You need to get out of that class. And you need to get in a class where somebody's a little bigger, a little faster, a little smarter, a little quicker. You follow me? A little better than you. Because that's the way you grow. You grow when you become a part of the team, and it's just an absolutely essential part of your success, and it's an essential part of my success. Okay, law number three. Let me ask you before I go to law number three. Are you learning something?
Yeah.
Okay. I know you are. So look at your neighbor and say, are you learning something? Go ahead and tell me.
Are you getting it?
ask him this question. Say, do you understand the law of the big picture? Ask him that. Do you understand the law of
the big picture?
Do you
understand the law of the big picture?
Oh, well, let me say, if they said yes, that they understood the law of the big picture, tell them the big picture is there are 15 more laws. We've only done two, baby. Law number three is the law of the niche, N-I-C-H-E, the law of the niche. And the law of the niche, I love this one because it's so opposite of what I just talked. The law of the niche is basically all players have a place where they add the most value. In other words, if you're on the team, Let me tell you something about the team. The law of the big picture says you give it up for the team, but the law of the niche says, let me tell you something, you have a vital role on the team, and the team needs you. Now, you're not the center of the team, but the team needs you. Because you're unique. Because you have certain gifts. And you bring a certain value to the team. And successful leaders have found their niche. They found their strength zone. I teach that all the time. I taught it to you. Successful leaders, they found their strength zone. They found their niche. Or successful people, they found their strength zone. Successful leaders, they find the strength zone of others. They find the niche for others. In other words, let me ask you a question. How well, if this is your team, how well do you know your team? Do you know, let's say you've got six members on your team. Many don't really know, I know, but I'm just giving you an illustration. That's six. What can you tell me about those six people? Do you know what each one of their passions are? Do you know what each one of their gifts are? Do you know what their temperament is? Do you know what their goals are? Have you ever talked to them and asked them and found out what their strengths are? You see, if you're leading a team, you've got to manage them and you've got to position them correctly. And Jim Collins said it. I mean, you already read his books. He's a wonderful friend. It is a fabulous offer. Jim said, you've got to get the right people on the bus. And you know, you need to get them on the bus, but you need to get them in the right seat on the bus. I'm amazed at people who have responsibilities to place people correctly that don't understand what their strengths are. And a good person with great strengths, if they're in the wrong position, they won't be effective. My basketball coach in high school taught us that. When he had a scrimmage, the first scrimmage of the year, he put the first team out of position. And he put the second team in their right positions, and they beat us in the scrimmage. He said, guys, if you're out of position or if you're not where you should be on the floor, you're going to always lose. He was trying to help us say, no matter how talented you are, no matter all the skills that you've got, if you're not positioned correctly, you won't be successful. And this law of the niche says, you got to put your people in the right place. By the way, let me give you an exercise that I have used over the years that is powerful with this. Let's say that this first table here, I've got 1, 2, 4, about 7. Let's say they're my team. And as I look at my team, I know what their strengths are because I know what their passion is. I know what their gifts are. I know what their heart is. I know what they dream about, what their goals are. I know them. Okay. And as I take my team, I position correctly. Now, here's what you do with them. Help me out. What's your name? Emma? Hi.
Emma.
My name's Jeff. Nice to meet you.
Next
husband. What's his name? Peter. Let me tell you something. Is that your kid? Emma, let me tell you something I know about Peter. I mean, you're just a precious, beautiful couple. Let me tell you, Emma, what I know about Peter. Just looking at you, he married way above himself. Hey, the man is in sales. Or as in Georgia, as they said in Georgia, he outpunted his coverage, trust me. Okay, I got Peter and Emma. What's your name? Eric. Okay, now watch, if this is my team, and I spent time with Peter and Emma and Eric, okay? I mean, I spent time with them. I know, okay. So I sit down and I say, Emma, let me tell you something. I've watched you, and these are some of the qualities of a team player that you really exhibit well, because I know the qualities. And Emma, let me tell you something. Where you really help this team is, let me tell you what your strength is. And I affirm her strength. Now, watch what I do. I do that with Peter. I do that with Eric. I do that with all seven members. I do that. I do that personally with them. I sit down and I help them understand what they do well and how they are bringing value to the team. Okay, do you see what I'm doing? Now, I bring the team together. And as I look at the team, I say, now, I want to start with Peter, and I want to tell the rest of you why Peter is so valuable to this team. And I take him now, and I affirm his strengths and gifts in front of the rest of the team.
I did that with him. I did that with her. In other words, when you tell the individual their strengths and help them get positioned correctly, you bring a real sense of confidence to them. But when you tell the rest of the team about their strengths, you bring value to them. Now, did you get me? When you deal with the individual and give them their strengths, you bring confidence to them. But when you share with the rest of the team what their strengths are, you bring value to them. Confidence and value. That's all in the niche. And it's all because I have taken time to study my team and I understand where their strengths are. And it's a terrific law, and it will work in your life and it will work in my life. Law number four is the law of Mount Everest. And the law of Mount Everest just simply says, as the challenge escalates, the need for teamwork elevates. In other words, as the challenge gets bigger, the team's got to get bigger too. This is a great law. This is a law about how to gather the team and how to grow the team. And so if you've got a big challenge, you've got a Mount Everest dream, you've got a number 10 dream, you've got to have a team that'll get you there. You don't climb Mount Everest by yourself, and a team that's a two or three doesn't get on top of Mount Everest. You've got to have a high quality team. When I went to San Diego in 1981 as a pastor of this church, the church was running 1,000 people, and it had been running 1,000 people from 1969 to 1981. So there had been a 12-year period where the church was just, it was flatlined. It ran 1,000 people. So here I come as the new leader of the group. So I bring my staff together, and they're not a big staff, maybe, I don't know, 40, 50 people. But this, I brought my staff together, and I got a marker board, and I put 1969, and I drew a line, and I put 1981, 12 years. And on that line, I put the number 1,000, and I looked at my team, and I said, let me tell you what I know about you. I mean, I just arrived. I'm just new kid on the block. In fact, this is my first month here. Can I tell you what I know about you? And most of the staff had been, all the staff had been there before I was there. I mean, I was the young kid. I mean, I was the leader, but I was the new kid. I said, let me tell you what I know about the team here. What I know about you is you are capable of leading 1,000 people. History tells me that. For 12 years, you've led 1,000 people. That's not a question. That's not up for debate. You are capable of leading 1,000 people. And they were sitting in the room, and they were feeling pretty good. So I went back to the marker board. And above that 1,000 line, I took my marker, and I put dots all across the top, and I put 2,000. And then between the 2,000 and 1,000, I put a big question mark. And I turned around, and I said, here's the question. The question is not, can you lead 1,000? That question is answered. The question is, can you lead 2,000? And then I looked at him and I said, I'm going to give you the answer. The way you're doing it now, the answer is no. Because if you could lead 2,000, you'd already have 2,000. Now I said, here's the good news. I'm a leader. And I'm going to teach you how to lead 2,000. And I'm going to train you. And I'm going to equip you, and I'm going to develop you, and I'm going to put you in your spots, and we're going to go to 2,000. And sure enough, in a couple years, we got to 2,000. So now they're feeling good, so we go back in the room, and I said, the question is not, can you lead 2,000? You're leading 2,000, so you know what I'm doing now, don't you? I'm going back to the marker board, I'm putting the dots, and I'm putting 3,000, and I'm doing a question mark between 2 and 3,000. I said, the question is, can you lead 3,000? I said, let me give you the answer. The answer is no, because you're not leading 3,000. But it's okay. I'm going to train you. And then I said to them, I said, and if you're not teachable or not trainable, then I'm going to change you. Which means you're gone, baby. Call you home. Now I said, I don't want to change you. I want to change you. And if I can change you, I won't have to change you. But if I can't change you, I will change you. So do you want to be changed or changed? One's got U-Haul. One's got salary range. IQ test. Now what was I doing with my team? Very simple. The law of Mount Everest. What I knew was, the only way
way that I could grow the company, the only way I could grow the congregation, the only way you could grow your organization, the only way you can grow your business is by growing your team. It's that simple. You gotta be able to recruit them. You gotta be able to understand how to develop them. You gotta be able to put them in the right place. And the law of the Mount Everest, it's a wonderful law, but it's a very simple law. And the law of the Mount Everest just says, the bigger dream you have, the better team you have to develop. So just think about for a moment. Ago, a little bit over an hour ago, I asked you in this room, how many of you have a dream? And you raise your hand. How many of you have a big dream? You raise your hand. Now, I love this. I love Worldwide, because you dream big and you think big, and I love it. I love all this. Now, here's the question. You got all this. You got the big dream. I got it. Here's the question. What are you willing to do to develop a team around you? Are you willing to work a little bit to develop a team? Are you willing to literally work your whole life to develop a team? How much effort you're going to give it? What kind of price you're going to pay for it? What are you going to do for it? How much are you going to study to learn to develop? Because I can tell you right now, your chance of becoming and going Diamond and Worldwide or any other organization is going to be based upon your ability to find people and develop those people and develop them into a team. And if you can do those things, you can find them, you can develop them, and you can put them into a team and make it a cohesive unit. It is absolutely amazing what you can. So when I'm talking about the laws of teamwork, I am talking about life or death to what you do. Law number five. Are you learning something? Yeah. Law number five. I got time for one more law. Just one more. The law of the catalyst. And the law of the catalyst just simply says winning teams have players that make things happen. They sure do. Winning teams have players that make things happen. I would like to challenge you in closing this evening to become a catalyst for your team. You say, John, what does that mean? Well, what a catalyst is a catalyst is a person that when the team needs success, he or she is the one they put the ball in their hands. John Wooden told me something interesting about choosing the captains of his teams. He said, John, I didn't choose the captain at the beginning of the season. I chose the captain about 5 games into the season. I said, Coach, why did you wait for 5 games into the season? He said, it's very simple. I wanted to watch my players play a game. And I wanted to watch them in the heat of the battle, especially when the game was close. He said, I wanted to see which players on my team, when the game was on the line, which players were saying, I want the ball, give me the ball. Which players were willing to take the risk? Which players were willing to take the responsibility? He said, I was looking for that player on the court that would just make things happen. And as soon as I found out the one who would make things happen, that would be the captain of my team. Well, you and I both know. There's a whole bunch of people. They don't even know what's happening. And I want to challenge you this evening. Some of you, this is your first Worldwide event. You're not even quite sure why you're here. You're not even sure what's happening here. You saw cars in the parking lot. You know what I'm saying? you just came in here and you said, whoa, my goodness, wow. Who's the fat old man up there? Okay. My name's John, I'm your friend. Let me tell you something. The first qualification of a person that's going to be a leader is that they are willing to make things happen. And in other words, they're willing to step out. They're willing to step up. They're willing to take the risk. And if you can't make things happen for yourself, you can't make things happen for anyone else. And so I want to challenge you. You may be clear at the last seat in the top balcony, the back. You may be using right now binoculars to see up here. But let me tell you something. I want to encourage you. Take responsibility. Say, I'm going to roll up my sleeves. And become a person that is willing to make a difference. Become a person that's willing to be a catalyst. guys, because every team needs those go-to players. Can you imagine how good the Bulls felt when they realized there was only one shot and they could get the ball to Michael? And here's what I love about Worldwide. Let me tell you what I love about this organization, and let me tell you why I come every year to Spring Leadership. I come to this organization every year not because I need one more speaking gig. Or not because I need another airport ride, and not because, like, I all year long said, "Dear God, if I could just get to Spokane." I come to Worldwide because I have, for now 6 years, watched this organization. And I know the leaders of this organization. Let me tell you what they believe, and let me tell you what they know. They know that the greatest asset to Worldwide are the people in this room. And they understand that if they give you an opportunity, that there are some of you, not all of you, but there are some of you, that you literally will step through that door and you'll say, "If it's to be, it's up to me." And you'll step through that door and you'll say, "I'm going to make the best of this opportunity. And I'm going to make it happen for myself, but I'm not only going to make it happen for myself, but I'm going to get around others, and I'm going to develop others, and I'm going to develop a team, and I'm going to make it happen for them." And I'm going to tell you what's going on. Some of you in these next two, tonight and tomorrow night, you're going to understand these laws of teamwork, and you're going to sit there, and you're going to say, "I got it." And when you say, "I got it," what you're really going to say is this: "I'm going to commit my life to being a person of success who helps other people be successful." And to you and to Worldwide, I honor you and I tip my hat, because I know how to build a team. You have the climate in this organization to build a team. You have the opportunity in this organization to build a team. You have the tools in this organization to build a team. You have the teachings in this organization to build a team. You have the leaders in this organization to build a team. It's all there for you. You are at the Worldwide buffet. And everywhere you turn is good stuff. And you can, if you want to, you can just pull your sleeves and walk up to the Worldwide buffet and say, "I'll take a little of this, take a little of this, take a little of that, take a little of that, have a little bit of that, bring that on over here." And you can build and be all that you want to be, because you're part of an organization that says, "We will not put a lid on you. We'll take the lid off of you, and we'll let you reach your potential." And so here is my closing words to you. I'm in Spokane because here's what I know is going to happen. Some of you, not all of you, but some of you, you're going to make decisions tonight and tomorrow night and throughout this weekend to be all that you can be, and to help people be all that you can be, and together be all that you can be, so that you can be all that you can be, so that you can reach the dream that you've got. And when you raise your hands at the first part of this lecture tonight, next year you'll be raising both hands and say, "I got it, baby. I got it."